Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, January 27th, 2025. My name is Magnus Thiewald, and joining me
Peter,
in the studio.
Peter R.H.
And we have a bunch of good stuff lined up for you today. We have an interview with Sean Cranberry about the challenges the small press and writers sort of festival scene is having, not only here in Vancouver, but across the country. There's a lot of organizations are running into trouble. Some have shut down. Others are finding themselves in a bit of a cash crunch. It's a bit of a new world for that scene, which is a really important incubator for writers and the writers community here in Vancouver and in Canada. So we're going to talk to Sean about that. We have a story from Danny, our reporter here at CJSF, about preparations and planning that the city of Burnaby is doing for extreme weather emergencies. We've, of course, with the big atmospheric river earlier this fall, we had quite a bit of flooding in Burnaby. And of course, they're also looking at things like wildfire risks, looking down at what's been happening down in Los Angeles. What are you talking about today, Peter?
Well, I'm going to talk about the history of mainland Chinese and the U.S. trade, starting in 1979, actually.
Right.
Because when Nixon went to China in 1972, there wasn't the beginning of trade. But there was, starting in 1979, a few years after Chairman Mao's death.
Right. And, of course, today there's a huge amount of trade between the U.S. And China. And one of the things Donald Trump has been talking a lot about is slapping a tariff on all that Chinese trade, anywhere from 10% to 60%. So it's kind of that history is relevant.
Yes. So it's sort of... It's interesting that it's really not till 1995 there's a perceived trade imbalance between the U.S. and mainland China. And prior to then, in the 1980s, until like the mid-1990s, it was the Japanese that they were concerned about. Mm-hmm. And that sort of kind of faded away. Unfortunately for Japan, in a sense that they sort of lost their way. I mean, I during the 1990s, they weren't as strong economically mm-hmm. as they had been prior to then.
Yep.
And so I'm going to go through it.
Excellent. So, it's beautiful weather out there today. And we'll bring you some weather a little later in the broadcast. Plus, got a couple good tunes lined up for you as well. But let's get started off with Sean Cranberry, my discussion with Sean Cranberry, about what's been happening and the challenges facing the publishing and writing community across Canada. Sean is one of the leaders of and organizers of the Real Vancouver Writers Series, a regular series bringing local writers a forum to discuss their work and share their work, and has been very involved in the writing and publishing community, not only here in Vancouver, but through involvement in things like the Canada Council. We sat down last week to talk about some of the challenges being faced by that community. Welcome, Sean Cranberry. Thank you for joining me today.
Hey, Magnus, thanks for having me. It's great to be back on CJSF.
Great. Yeah, you have a bit of history with us, having in years past done a show on writing and publishing in our local community in that area.
Yeah. There was from 2009 to 2015. It was called Books on the Radio, and it was a lot of fun.
Great. Well, we're actually here to talk a bit more about that same subject today. Because you've been active, you know, with shows like that, but a lot of other things, active in the writing and publishing scene in Vancouver for many years, with projects like the Real Vancouver's Writers Festival, as well as an observer of the scene here in Vancouver and across the country. So you recently posted on social media to your many colleagues in the business about serious troubles grassroots organizations are facing these days. Maybe before we get into that, maybe you could just sort of give us a bit of your background in the area that sort of sets you up as a good observer of what's been happening.
Yeah, thanks. A lot of it started with Books on the Radio. In 2009, that was sort of pre-podcast economy, right? Like early days. And having that transition, I was experimenting with podcasts, but I was also literally on the radio and with you guys. And so it caught some attention for a lot of reasons. Around that time, the Olympics blew through town. I partnered with a group called W2, where you and I also have some relationship history there, and started this thing called the Real Vancouver Writer Series. It's been 15 years, obviously since 2010. So being in touch with putting writers in front of audiences, marketing, promoting, connecting with publishers and writers across the country, being involved in those conversations. Was involved as a steering committee for the Canada Council in 2013, 2014, to put together the National Forum on Literary Arts, which was this big transition in public funding from the old model to what's the new model today, which is where we have the portal, this thing called the portal on the Canada Council. Everybody who knows what I'm talking about is groaning and is in misery right now thinking about it. And a lot of work with the BC Arts Council, sitting on juries, advisories, being involved with writers, all kinds of stuff like that. And being involved and in conversation with these folks, especially on channels, on the social media channels, as they deteriorate before our very eyes, there's a lot of conversation about a lot of changes that are happening, whether it's related to funding or related to other things in the various industries that are attached to it.
Right. So what you were posting on your post that started this conversation between us, is that a lot of organizations, grassroots organizations, are finding themselves in trouble or facing a lot of challenges that are new. Can you kind of explain what you're talking about there?
Yeah. So, it's tough all over, as they say, right? So the day that I had posted that was the 14th, so about 10 days ago, and it was really around the announcement that New Star Books, sort of local, legendary, grassroots, anarchist publisher that has published some of the finest voices in Vancouver and Canadian literature in the past 50-some-odd years, right? They've decided to shut down, and that sort of piggybacked on Broken Pencil magazine also recently shutting the doors. Kingston Writers Series just cut bait and left town and hadn't paid a whole bunch of people money, and there's a lot of bad feelings around that. So Kingston Writers Fest has been around for a long time, always has a great reputation. Creative Writing and Publishing Program at Sheridan College is winding itself down. This is the last cohort that will graduate in that in the next couple of years, to my understanding. Word Vancouver, local, legendary, festival that happens at in its physical manifestation at the VPL in end of September every year. It has a shortfall, $25,000, a giant chunk of money that you just don't find in your couch. Mm-hmm. Lots of other organizations, Real Vancouver Writer Series, just, the one that I'm involved with, I'm most familiar with, has been shut down in our grant applications from various Canada Council and BC Arts Council over the past year. It's been a real struggle for us to to find that mix, other local organizations who chimed in on that thread as well. So the writing and publishing community, a lot of them in the grassroots area, seem to be saying that there's, for different reasons, the taps are being turned off on some of those situations, and each situation is different. You know, a book publisher is way different than a reading series. Yeah. But it does seem to me, you know, that these things are cyclical. I do think that, you know, when it comes to things like Real Vancouver, for example, you know, we're not a corporate, no one's getting paid, right? So everyone's doing this stuff as a volunteer. And after a certain point of time, we've been doing this for 15 years, you know, perhaps fatigue begins to set in, you know?
Yeah.
And I'd be the first to admit that, you know, we have to, as people who are applying for public money, we have to own a little bit of that part of the process ourselves. Yeah. But you know, it is happening not just here but elsewhere as well, and it is a bit of a trend that people are feeling.
So what do you think? You've sort of alluded to a few things. What do you think is sort of behind this? You know, is it a hangover from the pandemic? Is it, you know, the impact of social media, or is it this, you know?
You know, I don't know. Like, social media is such a weird thing. You can blame it for everything, and yet it helped so many other things. In many ways, it helped the writing community in Canada become better acquainted with itself. It broke down those traditional geographical boundaries. It put people directly in contact. You know, you didn't have to write a letter to the editor at the Walrus in order to be heard. And yet, obviously, we've seen that it's also hugely problematic. And you know, part of sort of this, like, modern corporate way of managing media. But I think that some part of it is the pandemic. I do think that when you're talking about book publishers that have been around for a little while and trying to pass that business, quite apart from the art and cultural aspect of it, it's the business, right? Mm-hmm. Passing that along to someone who's going to carry it into the future, where, you know, it's tough. It's tough to sell poetry the best times, and it's tough to find a market to sell. Where Indigo, Amazon, independent bookstores. How do you market and promote that stuff? It's tough, and you got to be really dedicated. I do think that there's a part of it which is that some arts organizations, we're talking about public funding, I do think that there are some that are the funders, the public funders, BC Arts Council, Canada Council, whomever, are changing, well, they're changing the algorithm. They're changing the way that the funding gets allocated, right? So BC Arts Council has definitely gone further towards really, really trying to get out of the metropolitan region. So, you know, our organization is called Real Vancouver. It's tough. Yeah. We do try and be as diverse and sharing our platform as much as we can. But the BC Arts Council has gone towards, like, funding more regional stuff, getting out of the 604 area code, which I think is great. And they have absolutely focused more funding on Indigenous, rural and remote, traditionally underserved communities, which, again, you can't argue with. It's a great idea. So I think the models have shifted. Maybe the organizations have not, or maybe the organizations have only sort of paid lip service to the transitions and maybe really haven't embodied it, and we're starting to see that now.
Yeah. So, I mean, from your thread, you know, a lot of people chimed in and participated with their own organized or their own experiences, sort of echoing what you were hearing. And from that, you sort of moved on to creating a forum on Discord where you could discuss it more, with an idea towards perhaps finding solutions, or at least identifying the problem more clearly so people could address it. So how's that discussion going?
It's going really well. So what we did is we started what's called the Discord server.
Yeah.
It's an independent spot on this on the internet that is managed within a framework of a thing called Discord, which in some ways, just for the listeners who might not know, it sort of functions like your own private Twitter or Facebook account,
yeah.
Right? So, and you have to join it. You have to either be invited or you have to have a link in order to access it. And you, so your mom or your aunt or your uncle who's posting, you know, cat memes or what conspiracy theories yeah. is not on there, right? So the 14th, right around the time when, you know, stuff is about to go haywire, the transition and the American political scene is happening. Elon Musk is Elon Musk. Like, there's a lot of concern on the social media channels that what was more than 10 years ago, 2013, 2014, this Valhalla of conversation and cat yeah. memes. And everything was great. Social media is awesome.
And really providing a great way to promote things.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a different time, right? Mm-hmm. And so now poison is in the wound. Fascism is everywhere. It's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where you could have these conversations, say on Facebook, say on Twitter, say wherever, in those old days, now you can still have those conversations, but somebody else in your feed is going to T-bone you with some like slogans or some
yeah.
theories or some crap or some ad or Temu or whatever, right?
Yeah.
It's just cluttered. So and people were concerned, especially about the fascism piece. So we were like, okay, well, let's just start our own community on Discord yeah. and let's just see if people are going to be interested in it. And, you know, it's been a little more than a week, and I think we've got like 100, 120 people who've just migrated there. We haven't promoted it, or it's all word of mouth, which I think is good. And the conversation inside is pretty engaged. People are talking about a lot of different things, and I think people are – what's happening is that they're happy to not have that crap
mm-hmm.
interrupt what it is that they want to talk about, which is books and writing, their favorite books, questions about editing and novels and manuscripts and all that kind of stuff. It for now, it's because you never want to say that anything's for forever, because you know social media just doesn't work that way. But for now, it's a nice solution for the problem of all of the noise
mm-hmm.
that accompanies conversations online now.
So you sort of described it perhaps as something that's cyclical. Do you think things are going to swing back for these organizations, or do they need to find some way to change?
You know, I think at some point you really do have to do some hard thinking about where you are as an organization. And I think that it doesn't matter doesn't matter who you are. You know, I'm sure, you know, CJSF, certainly at W2, we had to do some soul searching.
Yeah.
But I think that for those organizations, I'm not so sure.
Yeah.
For the people who are involved in those organizations, who are learning and who are a part of it and who are seeing what's up, I think that part of the cycle and part of the problem, the general problem with, say, things like public funding for mm-hmm. art, is that there's this assumption that it will last forever.
Yeah.
And that there's an infinite amount of funds and that, you know, but part of that is problematic because so many sort of legacy arts organizations, right? Vancouver International Film Festival, Vancouver Writers Festival, Stratford in Ontario, for example.
Yeah.
They've been around for a long, long time and they are sort of like always going to get the money.
Yeah. And they often get quite a lot of funding.
And they're going to take a chunk, right? Yeah. So Real Vancouver is asking for a drop in the bucket. We didn't get it.
Yeah.
Fair enough. We're not asking for up to $250,000 in funding. It would be awesome, but that's not what we're asking for. So I think that, and the more important thing, that one of the things that we've talked with the BC Arts Council about a lot and Canada Council as well, is how do you honor the legacy arts organizations, make sure that, you know, they're still there. But how do you also make room for new entrants? You know, like where is the opportunity for kids coming out of SFU who've got great ideas, a ton of energy, but they need a little bit of money?
And I guess,
I know from experience, it's really tough to get in there. So, you know, maybe what's happening is that they're recognizing, maybe it's partly because of the pandemic. I don't know. but it might be that, you know, change is happening and the churn is on, and that's just the way it is.
And maybe the question shouldn't be about these organizations, but rather the community of writers and publishers and everybody involved in that sort of community and ecosystem that, that provides a supportive place for art to happen.
Yeah, totally, totally, totally. So the organizations themselves might have to change, adapt or whatever. But I think that if the communities, the art, the literature, the writing, the publishing, all of that stuff is built into the fabric of our society, and it will survive and it will change. As long as all of that, as long as we're encouraging new entrants and we're encouraging organizations to change, I think there's no problem. It'll be fine. And one of the things that's very famous across all art forms is, you know, the process of handing a successful arts organization on to the next generation.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter whether it's publishing, writing, art, blah, blah, blah. It's really hard. And the arts councils really try to work with some of these older folks who are, you know, who have done great work for decades into transitioning to a newer generation. And it's really tough for them to do. I've heard them talk about it quite a bit.
Right. It's a founder syndrome.
Yeah.
Where, you know, someone who's built it up over decades, even, you know, it's hard to step away and let someone else take over.
Yeah, yeah, conflict of ideas, sort of generational conflict of how to go about doing things, and just the brutal reality of the economy right now. Yeah. It doesn't help either, you know.
So I want to help, you know, put this into perspective a little bit of just how important this community can be. So what is the role of small presses and local festivals and those kind of things? Because we hear a lot about, you know, the Giller Prize and the big festivals and, you know, all that really high-profile stuff. But, you know, that's operating way up here where people have made it already. What is the role of the small presses and the local festivals and that whole community? What does it mean for writing in Canada?
Yeah, I mean, it's the grassroots. It's where it all starts, you know. It's incredibly rare for somebody's very first book, an unknown person, to like float its way up to the Giller shortlist and win that thing, which is $100,000, you know, and guaranteed sales and book deals and blah, blah, blah. So the small presses are super important, and Vancouver has some of the best. I mean, New Star is shutting down, but New Star is a really important local press. Obviously, Arsenal Pulp Press and Anvil Press, not all the presses begin with A, but they are super important because they have their own personal mandate to focus on art and to focus on stories that matter. And they have the ability to experiment with stylistic change, new voices. I mean, the LGBTQ 2S+ community that is served by folks like Arsenal, like the work that those folks, those books have found huge audiences that they never would have found had they been published. Well, Random House or HarperCollins never would have published them.
Right.
They would have just left them in the slush stack, you know? So, you know, you're not going to sell a lot necessarily with a small press. But, you know, like a lot of these small presses, that whether they're publishing, you know, feminist work, poetry, nonfiction, very specific stuff, there is still a grassroots community that attends that stuff, and the big people are paying attention to it. The Random Houses, the Harpers, they're all paying attention. Social media makes it a lot easier. Things like Real Vancouver, I mean, we give people a place to gather four times a year and to meet writers, and writers get to see an audience and have their books promoted, supported, and seen. And I think that as a gathering spot, you know, most of our local stuff that we've done over the past couple of years has been done at the Russian Hall, which is just down Strathcona neighborhood, just off Hastings and Hawks. And so close for people to gather, places to eat and drink around. It's just really important for people to see each other, especially post-pandemic, right? Like to get together in the same room with people of talent that, you know, you might meet somebody, you might see something, you might feel part of a scene. really important. And things like the festival, I may have sounded like I was hacking on Vancouver Writers Festival earlier, but I am not, because one of the things that they do is they not only platform local writers in conversation with like famous international writers, but they bring those folks from around the country and around the world into Vancouver to give audiences and local writers the opportunity to rub shoulders and be on the same level. You know, I think Vancouver has some of the tightest and best writers in the world working today. Yeah. And I really think that, you know, that it's a result of a really strong grassroots publishing and writing community that that punches above its weight and doesn't get the credit that perhaps it's due. But I think you ask anybody around, and they'll tell you that the Pacific Northwest, Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, it's one of these like hidden secrets of literature in North America. People love it.
Great. Well, you know, I guess we live in pretty weird times right now. I mean, just this week is pretty weird already. But you know, hopefully the community will see itself rebound and move on to new strength.
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, like what you guys are doing to CJSF is a really important part of the fabric of what we're talking about. Writers tend to, and publishers, they tend to sort of second themselves among each other.
Yeah.
And that we do better when we connect with other art forms and other media opportunities, and the local stuff that you guys are doing is a big, important part of making sure that the community stays in touch with each other and feels seen. So thank you for the work that you guys are doing.
Thank you. So, with your new Discord community, is there a way people can get a hold of you? I know the invite link is kind of too complicated to read out on the air here. Nobody's going to get it. You know, yeah. Can they reach out to you via one of your platforms?
Yeah, so you can they can reach out just by email. Probably the easiest.
Yeah.
So Real Vancouver Writer Series, we have our URL is realvancouver.org.
Yeah.
And so just put Sean at the beginning of that, Sean at realvancouver.org, S-E-A-N, yeah. And send me an email and I will fire you off the link.
Great. So if you want to join and get be part of this community, talking about what's going on in Vancouver, both in terms of, I guess, ongoing events and community and collaboration, but also, you know, discussing the health of the community, follow up with Sean there. Thanks so much for talking to me today, Sean. Sean Cranberry of Real Vancouver Writer Series and many other activities in the community. Thanks for coming and talking about this these challenging times today.
Yeah, thanks, Magnus. Great to see you.
Okay, talk to you soon.
Yep.
And that was Sean Cranberry of the Real Vancouver Writers Series. And that email, again, if you're curious about getting involved with that conversation, which is taking place on a Discord server featuring many folks from our area and beyond, you know, talking about what's happening in the writing and publishing scene and what solutions might be brought forth to reinvigorate that scene and make it healthy. And that is Sean at realvancouver.org, S-E-A-N for Sean at realvancouver.org. And send him a note. Tell him you're interested in joining the conversation, and he'll hook you up. All right. We have coming up in just a couple of moments, we have preparations that the City of Burnaby is making for extreme weather and how the community can manage that. But first we have, here is Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Christian Cooper is host of the National Geographic show Extraordinary Birder, and author of the memoir Better Living Through Birding. But as a kid, Christian says he wasn't interested in birds until his parents made him take a woodshop class.
I had to build something, so I built a bird feeder and I put it up in the backyard.
Christian filled the feeder with cracked corn. And then
this bird shows up, all black except for this patch of red at the wings.
At first, Christian thought he discovered a new species of crow.
And I was thrilled with my preteen scientific prowess. And then I found out it was a red-winged blackbird. Oops. But still, to this day, one of my favorite birds. And